everyone. Thanks for tuning into this week's message. My name is Gregory, and I'm part of the team here at Friends Church. Everything we do around here depends 100% on the generous donations of our local and online communities. That's people just like you who believe that life really is about leaving a positive mark on our world. So if you love what Friends Church is up to, I'd like to encourage you to contribute by going to friendschurch.ca. With that, let's jump into this week's message.
Whoa. Wow. There is a bigger picture. Good morning again. And hey, look at this is the time in the service when typically one of our charitable giving team would stand up here and thank you and remind you that this place is really, it's powered up by the giving of our community. And so I'm taking my turn. I get my turn in here. I'm not professional like those guys, but I'll take a run at this. Look, I feel a little bit like Dina Hinshaw this morning, our chief medical officer of Alberta, who will stand up one day and say, "Woo, well done, Alberta. We are flattening that curve. We're doing great." And then it's like, feels like 3 days later, she's going, "Hang on, we got to, the wheels are wobbling here, we got to mask up, we got to," you know, it's like this constant up and down roller coaster watching those press conferences thinking, are we winning? No, we're not winning. And a few weeks back, I was able to stand up here and say, man, it's unbelievable. We've come through this coronavirus season, and as a community of donors who are supporting the work of Friends Church, we have just been able to meet expenses. Revenue has been consistent and staying through. And over the last couple weeks, I've begun to have some conversations, some difficult, dark conversations with some people that now are feeling the brunt of Corona affecting their finances, their jobs. There's been some layoffs. There's been some people that are going, I believe in what you guys are doing, but I'm so sorry. I can't do this. And you know, as a leader of this community, one of the leaders of this community, it's wonderful to be able to look them in the eyes and say, whoa, shh, there's no apologizing right now. We knew these times were going to happen. We knew these things were going to be a part of some people's reality. Thankfully, we're a big community, and we've got some people that, while they're struggling, there's other people that aren't. So I want to look at those of you in the eyes right now. Maybe you're listening, or maybe you're here in person, who are in a place right now where you're going, oh, I'm feeling the pinch. I just want you to know, we understand. And this is going to be a community of support, right? We're all in this together. We're a family. Sometimes you just need to be reminded. In this time, you need to be still. You just need to be still and know that something bigger and wider is here. And there's a community here. For others of you, you're in a place right now where your finances haven't been affected. And it should be a time of celebration for you internally. And just gratitude and whatnot. And so I'm up here to say, for those of you that are struggling, we understand. For those of you that aren't, maybe you're listening and you've never been a part of the financial equation of Friends Church, this is your time to shine, all right? This is when you can jump on the app, you can jump on our website, hit the donate button, and become one of the army of people that believe the world needs a Friends Church. It needs an organization that's willing to be able to help people find their spirituality in the midst of real life. That's what we're about, helping people just impact their world, make a more positive impact in the world. So anyways, if you can help, if you can jump in and help lighten the load for some others that aren't at this time able to, it'd be greatly appreciated. We need Friends Church moving strong, hey? Anyways, that's all I got to say. Turn it over to Vince. You got a good one coming your way. Enjoy.
I know who you are, just so you know. Good morning, everybody. It's great to have you here today. It's great to see your smiling eyes. Not faces, but eyes. I really want to ask you guys to all put up your hands for an informal survey. But I'm not going to ask you to do that today. But anyone like me find themselves acting like a dick now and again? You know, driving down the road and someone's driving like an idiot in front of you, also known as not going the exact speed that I want them to do. What do you do? Smile, wave, No, you yell at them, right? And then you tailgate them, and then you pull up beside them, and you have a little conversation back and forth, and then you cut them off. Or at least that's what I hear people do. Anyone find themselves in this season, you know, speaking to someone that they love in a way that, if you really looked at it, you probably wouldn't have used that tone of voice if you thought about it deeply? Oh yeah, that one's a tough one, huh? You find yourself reacting in ways that you wish you wouldn't react? Saying things using words that you wish you wouldn't? In the moment, it's not like you're planning it. It's kind of like it slips out. Life just happens, and then all of a sudden you're just, you know, screaming at someone you love, and you're going, what am I doing? Why am I acting like a dick? I was, we all know we should never do this, but I did it. I was on social media the other day, and I followed a link to one of my favorite magazines. It's a climbing magazine. I read an article, and then I did the second stupidest thing I've done, is I read the comments. Within seconds, I am just ranting. Like, the stuff that's coming out of my mouth, I don't even believe it. But I was just losing my mind. Saying, you know, these huge things like, blah, 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 this is stupid, I'm gonna go blah, blah, blah. My wife Ellie's there, she's looking at me, and she can see just like the monster in me is coming out, and she's kind of doing this like, what do I do, what do I do? So she's like, it's okay. And of course, what do? I now turn all that on her. Blah, 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 right? You know that whole thing, can you throw that picture up? You drop a stone in a pond and the ripples go out? You know that? You've ever seen that? Well, you know what? If you drop a big turd in a pond, ripples go out too. And I dropped a big old turd in our family. And the ripples started going out, and I could see her like, you know, she's pulling back, and I'm just ranting away. And today I want to explore this idea of what impact does us being dicks have on the world around us? Like, let's take aside whether or not it wrecks my life and I'm, you know, a moron or whatever. I just want to think about that turd that you drop in the pond of your life and my life. And just see what happens with that. Because I don't know about you, but I've seen those ripples flow out from that too. I snap at her. She pulls away. Now I feel bad. We have these awkward times, right? You see it in the lineup. The other day I was in a lineup at a store. Some dude, I don't know what his problem was, but he was losing his mind. We can all feel like the energy wafting on this guy is just brutal. And the whole time, he's like completely oblivious of what's going on around him. We're all kind of just slowly edging away from him. I swear the teller like saw him coming and was like, oh, I've had enough of you guys today. I am going to slow down every aspect of this next process and you are going to lose your mind. She's like, I've had enough of those ripples from the turds. I'm tired of y'all. So the question is, how do we avoid that moment? The ripples seem to flow out from the turds we drop into our lives, but how do we stop doing that, right? How do I stop acting like a dick? There's this idea that says, if the world around me would just act a little differently, I wouldn't act like a dick. I'm on this public forum for a workshop, and there's a guy who's completely sketched out about COVID. And he's like, if one more person walks closer than 6 feet from me with his freaking mask on and says, just a sec, as they sneaks past me, I am gonna lose my shit. Right? If they stop being dicks, I won't be a dick. So I decided I wanted to explore that topic a little bit. Actually, it kind of came the other way. I was looking through some articles and reading about some stuff. Does anyone know that book, The Five Love Languages? Gary Chapman, 13 million copies sold, one of the top-selling relationship books of all times. The guy's a counselor and a pastor, and after working with a bunch of people, he kind of wrote down this idea that says, we kind of have five love languages. First one, where did I list? Oh, there we go, words of affirmation. This is kind of like, I love you, you're awesome, you're the best person in my life. You know, if you're married, it's like, you're the best wife I've ever had. Wait, how many wives have I had? You know, but just bear with me. There's a certain skill to words of affirmation. You got to get it right. But it's this idea of like, I think highly of you and I tell you. The idea, he says, is when you have this as your primary love language and somebody in your life gives you words of affirmation, you just feel more loved than anything could possibly make you feel loved. It's a cool idea, huh? Another one's quality time. We spend time together one-on-one often, focus on each other. Giving and receiving of gifts, pretty straightforward. Physical touch, holding hands, arms around each other, snuggling. Acts of service, bring home groceries, help me with whatever I need help with. As I go through the list, does any of those resonate with you? You can feel like, oh yeah, that one feels really good, doesn't it? Or, oh, you know what, someone in my life, I know that one. Whew, they totally have that one. My kids, often I say, what's your kid's love language? They'll be like, oh, and they just like nail it. The kid cannot stop, you know, jumping on me and hugging me. Next kid stands back. Mommy, you're awesome. The reason I bring this up is because the idea is that if we have partnerships, friendships, marriages, even colleagues, if the person interacts with you like your primary love language, you will feel loved. You will feel happy. And when you're happy, you don't act like a dick. See how it all comes back into the beginning? And so this idea is pretty seductive, right? If the people around me would just interact with me like my primary love language, no more turds in the pool of my life. Problem. Research says it doesn't work that way. When I first read this, I was like, how can that be? Doesn't it make sense that if somebody interacts with me in the way that works for me, I'll feel loved, I'll feel happy, and I'll interact with the world in a different way? Doesn't that just make sense? Researchers put together a study, I think it was about 143 couples. They checked to see if knowing each other's primary love language had any impact on their happiness. I think the technical word was extremely weak correlation, not significant at all. Now some of you are looking at me going, yeah, but knowing it's not enough. You got to do something with it, right? Well, the idea in five love languages is you tend to give your love the way you like to receive it. I tend to like acts of service. So I'm constantly saying to Ellie on the way home, hey, can I pick you up anything? Can I do anything to make you happy? Can I put a smile on your face? Like, I'm constantly doing that, right? Because that's how I like it. And so they thought, well, wait a second. If we get couples that have the same love language, they're constantly going to give it to each other, right? Couples both have physical touch. They're all over each other. They're constantly holding hands, snuggling. It's going to be perfect. It's like the perfect relationship. And just, let's be honest, any of us in any sort of relationship in our lives, at some point we've thought, if my partner was just a little bit more like me, this wouldn't be such a big deal, right? You don't need to nod. We've all done it. Here's the problem. When they check to see if there's a correlation between having the same needs or basically meeting each other's needs consistently, weak correlation to happiness. I remember when I first read this study, actually, it was the second or third time I read the study because I was going, this can't, Like, let's be honest, folks. Hasn't Disney taught us our whole lives? If you find your Prince Charming, if you find your Cinderella, they're going to be perfect, and you're going to be happy, right? Disney, those freaking liars. But then, you know, as I get older, if you find your Christian Grey and Anastasia Steele, if you find them, everything is going to be perfect. You're going to be happy. No more being a dick. No more dropping turds into the pool of your life. Everything is going to be fine. But it's not. Weak correlation to happiness. If my happiness isn't dependent on my partner or my friends or my family interacting with me in the way that I like, behaving with me in the way that I like, what do we do with that? How do I manage my life? A friend of mine, and when I say friend, I'm going to completely change the story. It's based on a real story, but I don't want you guys to make any connection to the people. So I'm going to add a whole bunch of details and change a bunch of things. This was the real detail. We sat down for coffee one day, and I remember thinking, she's going to tell me that she's leaving her husband. I don't know about you, but those are always kind of heavy conversations to have. So I remember walking to the coffee shop. It was Extreme Bean over Memorial. Sat down. She sits down. Started off with chit-chat. And I'm like, how you guys doing? She's like, we're doing really well. I was like, she's married, monogamous. You and your husband are doing really well? I just want to make sure that she's not thinking somebody else, right? She's like, yeah, we're doing really well. And I was like, their story had been for years struggling. You put them in the room together, everyone kind of just shies away from them a little bit. Just the energy coming off this couple just felt gross. I remember she first read Five Love Languages. She's like, Vince, I know the problem now. I have quality time, and he's not doing it. I don't feel loved. I don't think I've ever felt loved. You see, she bought into that idea, right? If he behaves this way, if he does quality time with me, then I'll be happy and our relationship will work. It got bad and then it got worse. I think lawyers were called at some points. And so I'm sitting across the table from her and going, so you mean you and your husband, right? We're talking about the right person here. You guys are doing really good? I said, yeah. I said, what the hell happened? She said this, I threw away the Five Love Languages book. What? She said, you know what? I'm spending all this time trying to make him behave in a way that would make me feel good. And it wasn't working. And then one day I said to myself, okay, I have two choices. We either end this thing, we end the 20 years we're together, our kids, we end the whole thing. Or what if I ask a different question? What if I assume that my husband loves me? And then I ask this question, how is he showing his love? She said, when I read Five Love Languages, all I read was, you're not doing it right. I don't feel loved because you're not doing it right. And now I know exactly what you're not doing right. And if you just did it right, this would go well. We would be good. wasn't working. So I said, how is he showing that he loves me? I don't know about you, but that moment, how she was able to do that switch, that's like ninja level. She said, I stopped and I thought about it and I went, every day he goes to a demanding job to make sure our family has what we need financially. He doesn't love his job. But I think he does it because he loves us. And she was like, the other day, I thought of this really cool project that I wanted to be a part of. And you know what? It was going to take a lot of time and it wasn't going to pay worth anything. When I talked to him, he said, yeah, do it, babe. Totally. We can live on one salary for a while. We'll make it work. You'd love to do this. Anything in their household broke, he fixed it. She always wanted one of those rocking swings in her backyard. They didn't have the money for it, so he built one. Instead of spending time with her one-on-one, he's in the garage building her the swing that she always wanted. She couldn't relax at home. For some reason, work and home were connected, and so they bought a little vacation property. He spent so much time to build it into a paradise for both of them. She's like, I love being there. How does he show he loves me? By just giving and giving acts of service. She said, something shifted for me. When I watched my son come home one day with a broken bike and my husband dropped everything he was going to do and fixed the bike so my kid could go back out and ride again, she's like, something shifted in me. And I felt the love that I hadn't felt in a long time. You see, Disney taught us that if we find the right person, they'll behave the right way, and we will be happy. Five Love Languages says, not only that, but I'm going to tell you exactly how they need to behave so that you'll be happy. But the reality is, we've all experienced this, right? Whatever your primary love language is, somebody does it, and it doesn't work. Or flip it the other way. You do something for somebody, they love hugs, and they're pissed at you, and you go give them a hug, and they shove you away, and they yell at you, and you're going, this is supposed to work. You see, when we go back to the study, they ask the question, what actually correlates between relationships and happiness? If it's not how the people in our life behave, it's not them doing our love languages properly. What actually makes us happy? And study after study came up to the same thing, and it's what my friend was able to do in that moment. It's self-regulation. The ability to be in that moment when she doesn't even feel loved and go, wait a second. I can let that feeling drive my whole life. I can let that feeling get stuck in my gut and we will get divorced. Or I can let that feeling go and explore something different. And ask that profound question, how does my partner express their love to me? You see, when we can do that, we find happiness. And it's not dependent on whether or not the government says I have to wear a mask, or if somebody walks too close to me, or someone drives like a jackass in front of me. It doesn't matter. None of that stuff matters. Because the reality is, if someone drives badly in front of me and I'm not self-regulated, what happens? I lose it on them. But if they drive nice, what happens then? Well, I get mad at the stoplight, or at my wife, or at the teller, at the whatever, right? I'm going to find someone to get mad at. When I can self-regulate, when I can let myself say calm, everything changes. So we start off with this question. What is the impact of us being a dick in the world around us? Then I ask the question, what causes you to be a dick? We played with this idea that if everyone around me just acted better, everything would be fine. I would be fine. I'd be a great person. But the studies suggest that that's not the case. Disney lied to us. So where does that leave us? The other day when I blew up about that article in the magazine and then I spilled that onto my wife, after I calmed down, took a while, I sat down and I went, what has my last couple weeks looked like? And I realized that, man, I had been pushing hard. I've been working long, I've been playing hard, been in the mountains a ton. And one thing that I know about me, I need to take 2 hours off one evening a week to make sure that I don't turn into a dick. And I hadn't done that. Someone called and I was like, oh yeah, hey, I was going to have my Sabbath. That's what I called it. Time. I basically turn on a movie for 2 hours and just sit there and watch the movie. It's my Sabbath. You know, remember at the beginning, the whole story of God created the earth in 7 days, 6 days he worked, one day he slept, or whatever he did. I think he watched TV, personally. Just turned on a movie, zoned out a little bit, felt great after that. To me, that's Sabbath. And I don't do it because there's some religious rule about it. That's, who cares? I do it because it calms my soul. And a couple weeks before, somebody said, hey, can we get together? And I was like, yeah. I'm pretty busy, but you know what? I'll do it on that day when I normally take my Sabbath. And then the next week, something else happened. I was like, oh, hey, yeah, I'll do it that day. I'll just push it later. Got home at like 10, 30, 11 at night. Fast forward, I read an article. I haven't been doing any self-care. And now I blow a gasket. So let me ask you, what do you need to do to be able to manage yourself in a healthy way? To not blow up, to not give the cold shoulder. What do you need to do in your life? Is it alone time? Time with people you love? For me, watching 2 hours of TV uninterrupted? Is it sleep? Is it a physical practice, yoga or running or, you know, whatever? Do you know what that is that you need to do to be able to let those emotions, when they come, you know, sadness comes and you feel it and it just goes out of you? Anger comes up, it just goes out of you. Guy's driving like a jerk. Who cares? Instead of that feeling where it's locked in and you know you're just like, eh. Do you know what you need to do to be able to stay calm in your life? Do you know what you need to do to stay self-regulated? Because according to research, that's the number one predictor of happiness. That's the number one predictor of making sure that you behave in a way that fits your values. Not screaming at people you love, not losing your mind on the road, not doing all the things that we do, right? Blowing off friends, you know, never talking to family. We started off today looking at this idea that says, when I act like a dick, it's like dropping a turd in a pool and it just spreads. Sometimes people ask me, do you believe in hell? And I know what they're asking, but kind of in a cheeky way, I think to myself, yeah, dropping a turd in my life, that's hell to the people around me. So yeah, I believe in hell. So the question is, where are you creating hell in your life? Where is your dysregulation spilling out of you into the people around you? You can feel it. You talk to them differently. They react to you differently. And Disney said, if they just would act differently, you wouldn't treat them that way. If they just acted better, you wouldn't be upset the way you are, right? That's what Disney told us. Science says that's not the case. There will always be bad drivers. Your kids will always push your buttons. There's always going to be somebody doing something wrong around you. And if your happiness is dependent on that, you're screwed. I'm screwed. So the journey of our lives then, to make sure that we don't drop turds in the pool of the place that everyone around us is swimming in, is to learn how to stay calm, to self-regulate. And so your homework today, if you're open to it, is to think deeply about what you need to do to get into a healthy place. Where you're not amped up, you're not freaked out, you're not pissed off, you're not stressed to the nines. You can slow that down. Take some time. Do what you need to do to find that calm. Somebody told me this week, they're like, something changed in me, because now when I'm a slow driver instead of, or a fast driver that cuts me off on Deerfoot, instead of being like, you know, jackass and then racing up beside them and flipping them off and doing all that business, he's like, something changed. Now I just think, I bet you they're going to the hospital. Or I bet you they're doing something really important right now. Think about the difference of when he gets to where he's going after that interaction. Think of the difference of you not taking all that bunched up stress and waiting for somebody else to behave different so you can feel better, instead of going, no, I'm going to take responsibility for me. And find a calm place. My friend sits down and looks at her partner, and again, in a ninja level self-regulation, says, how is he showing his love to me? And she finds love again. Where do we need to do this in our lives? At Friend Church, we talk a lot about how we impact the world around us. We say we exist to inspire you to make the world around you a little bit better. But man, if that study is right, one of the biggest things we can do is regulate ourselves, to do good self-care so we can behave in a way that fits our values with the people around us. And so as you go from here, here's my suggestion. Find one thing you can do that will calm you, that will help regulate you. Figure out what it is. I don't know, yoga, meditation, watching really violent movies once a week. Got a thumbs up at the back row there. I liked it. Find what it is, you know, it doesn't matter what it is. Find it. And let that color your behavior for the rest of this week. If you want to take it to the next level, send that thing that you need to do to calm yourself to somebody you love and say, hey, help hold me accountable on this one. I need to be doing this more. Because right now, I'm dropping a whole lot of turds in the pool of my life. And I don't want to do that anymore. How to make the world around me a better place. What do you think? It's doable? May we be a community that brings love to everyone around us, not waiting for them to behave right, but coming from that calm place in our souls Amen. Next week, Jeff's going to talk a little bit about your inner guide, what inside you can trust and what inside you need to pay attention to, and what's part of you you need to ignore. I think it'll be a fantastic message. Have a great week, everybody. Have a good one.